It all came down to ashes after all these years. She found him dead at the Mission Motel, surrounded by the homeless and tears. The girl who stole his heart so many years ago dropped by that motel room to let those homeless know. Once upon a time, it used to make us laugh. Once upon a time, we shared a photograph. Once upon a time, we used to call him Crow. He was a summer moon. He was a gentle tune. And all, we loved him so. Story of the Crow. She told those hobos about Crow's daddy. Said he used his hands in every way. Holding whiskey bottles, collecting paychecks, plowing down anything in his way. He even used those hands to hit the boy some days. Crow would always shrug it off and say, once upon a time, used to make us laugh. Once upon a time, we shared a photograph. Once upon a time, we used to call him Dad. He was a midnight rambler, some old drunken gambler. And I loved him so. Father of the Crow. So tell me, where do crows fly? I don't know. Go ask Crow. Graveyards feel so empty when no one knows your name. Preacher held Crow's ashes up, said a couple prayers, and thanked the three folks that came. Then he talked about some God who sent down his only son. Said he walked this world alone till his whole world came undone. He said, once upon a time, a wise man it is you. He walked the razor's edge, always spoke the truth. He said once upon a time we used to call him God. He was a summer moon. He was a gentle tune. And we loved him so. A little bit like Crow. So tell me, where do crows fly? I don't know. Go ask Crow. I don't know. Go ask Crow.
That's JMR with Crow from his new live album, The Chicken Came First. Jay wraps his summer tour with a show at Hugh's Room on Thursday, November the 26th. The Chicken Came First is Jay's seventh album, and this one's a little different. It comes with a book, his first book that tells tales from his life on the road. We caught up with Jay at home in Toronto to chat about the new album and the book and his upcoming show at Hugh's Room. Great to talk to you today, Jay.
Great to talk to you, Jan. How are you?
Wonderful. It's wonderful to be able to talk to you. You must be pretty excited to be bringing this tour to an end with a big show at Hugh's Room in Toronto.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It feels like the ultimate Willie Nelson tour. It never really ends. It's just it ends because it's near the end of the year. But yeah, it's going to be a nice show. It's going to be about seven of us on stage. So hopefully some of your listeners might be able to make it out.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because when I've seen you play live, I do get that feel that there is a traveling show in there. And you seem to tour a lot. I often find that your summer tours will go on for months. Is that really what you love to do?
Pretty well, yeah. I mean, I've been at it for a long time, and I think I was going back over my shows this past year, and I think I clocked in around 140 shows again, and it's been like that every year. It seems to be the well-traversed Canadian. I feel like a song voyageur across the Canadian Trail, and there's all the different tenders of the trail, of which you would be one, being a folk producer and music lover, and you help us get the word out, and it's an amazing journey.
So The Chicken Came First, I mentioned, is your seventh album. This one is a little different because you're actually giving the album away with the book. I think that's probably the right way to put this. And the book tells tales from, you know, your life on the road. I think you like to keep a blog as you go from town to town, from show to show. So tell us a little bit about why you decided to do things this way around.
I think ultimately I'm a bit of an English lit nerd, and I studied that in university, and I've always liked reading and writing. When I was very young, I'm from Sault Ste. Marie originally, and I won a little poetry contest, and I think that kind of defined me and a lot of the writing that I did. And as time has gone on, I've always just loved storytelling, and almost in the great tradition of a Stephen Leacock or a Twain, I like to keep it in a humorous vein. So I started blogging, and a lot of the people that were coming to my shows were commenting on them, and it became relatively popular. I guess that's all relative, but the more I did that, the more I realized after a few years of doing it, I wanted something permanent. Thought, you know, all of this this internet is great, and it really gets the word out, but I want something that people can put down on their table and read, even if it's just a chapter at a time. So with each chapter, at the end of each chapter, there's a song which corresponds to the live CD in the back, and the charts for the song, and some beautiful illustrations by Pearl Rachinsky, a Canadian folk illustrator who helped with the book. And it was a it took a long time. It was about a year and a half in the making, but that's the story. Yeah.
It's interesting you say that, because when I talk to somebody who loves to write as well as to, you know, write songs and obviously play music, I always love to ask the question, well, you know, how much of the stories that you write will eventually become a song? I mean, is that something that does happen for you, or are you very much just coming up with the idea for the lyric once you have a melody to work with?
It's an oft-asked question with songwriters, and for me, I guess the best way I describe that, it's really interesting you asked that. I was just listening to it. Do you know Chip Taylor?
Yeah.
Listening to it. I met him with my publicist last year, and I've been kind of listening to a lot of podcasts with him. And he's the kind of writer that he just stream of consciousness. He writes whatever comes to his mind, and he basically leaves it almost untouched and maybe fools with it a bit after the fact. But and then you have writers that are very, very methodical, and they wake up every morning. I know Stephen King, the author, writes like that. He starts at 6 a.m. and plows through it every day. And I'm neither of those people. I mean, it to me, it seems to come when I'm driving or in a moment of stillness. Usually it takes a lot of quiet. And I think maybe my brain just generally processes things that have happened over the course of that week or what have you. So it'll be the lyric and the melody always seem to come together, present themselves at the same time, and I generally don't write them down unless I feel that it's strong enough. It'll come back. So the ones that come back are strong enough to write down, strong enough to work with, and I'm slow and methodical that way. But when they come fast. Like this last week has been a great week. I think the muse has been paying a visit. So long-winded answer to your question. It seems to come at the same time, and I don't know where it comes from.
So when you write your blog posts, are they an end-of-the-day thing? Or, again, are they, you know, at a moment when you're perhaps resting on the road somewhere that you decide to do something?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Usually in a burnt-out motel room after I'm a little bit bedraggled and have some time to digest what I've done. And the odd time, I'll just sit down and write. It just whenever the mood strikes me. I'm not a regular blogger. I'm telling everybody I'm extremely undisciplined.
The book obviously must have 12 chapters or something like that.
That's
There's
right. It
12
does,
songs on the album, 12 chapters in the book. I want to talk about the song we started with, which is a very powerful song about the death of a First Nations homeless person named Crow. Can you talk about that song?
I can, actually. It's an amalgamation of several characters I met along the way, but the central character is based on a First Nations fellow I met with his father when I was attending university at Carleton many years ago. And the father and son would always go to see an individual called Lucky Ron. And he's a guy that would play every Saturday afternoon in the tavern and play. He's like a local legend there. He would play Johnny Cash and Stompin' Tom covers, and all the university kids would come. And I would sit in the back corner and drink a Laurentide Court and hang out with the father and son of Crow. And, you know, eventually he just didn't show up one day, and I got the backstory on that. That's part of the story. And the other half of that story is it was prompted by the one and only songwriting session I went to. I attended one of these many years later. And they just said, pull a random line out of a hat that they've written down to inspire the song. And the random line I pulled out was, "Where do crows fly?" And those synergies seemed too powerful to not deal with. So I thought about it for a while, and I took that line and turned it into the song.
Am I right in thinking that First Nations issues appear in your songs quite often? I can think of one or two that you've written where they're very prominent, but is this a subject that's really important to you?
It is. It is, actually. And I'm glad you bring that up. Wherever I go, I seem to feel a real kinship to, you know, the First Nations people of the territory. And, you know, being from Sault Ste. Marie, we have the Batchewana Reservation and the Garden River Reservation on either side of the Sioux. And a lot of my friends were from those reservations, and I was privileged enough to be able to partake in some of the original ceremonies and check things out. It just always made a big impression on me, you know. And I feel there's a lot that we can learn from, you know, where they were. As one First Nations elder put it to me, He said, I think a lot of the times people are just trying to get to where we were. And that pretty well sums it up for me. There's a lot we can learn from those ways that are, you know, making sense.
You know, that's great. I'd like to take a break with another song from the album. And I'm going to ask to play a song that features another wonderful singer-songwriter from Toronto. That's Jada Kelly, who was at the show with you at Trinity Church in Scarborough. The beautiful song, Always in Her Dreams. And it's an interesting song because I think that's a song that you actually wrote about your own mother, Madeline. Is that right?
That's exactly right. My mother just turned 90 a few days ago, which is an amazing thing. But yeah, my mother is originally from Sault Ste. Marie, and her father owned, my grandfather, Eli, owned a billiards hall down on Gore Street in the Sioux, and it was right next to the Princess Movie Theater. And the Princess was where my mother at the time, you know, during the Great Depression, she said, you know, her only escape from this steel town, I guess, in a sense, was to maybe go in there and watch Shirley Temple movies and dream of a completely different life away from this working class town. So she would mention how her and her best friend Jackie would, if you were to collect 10 bread bags and bring them back to Bluebird Bakery, they would give you a nickel, and that would be enough to get you into the movie theater. So as a result of that passion for the silver screen era, all of my siblings, there's 8 of us in the family, we were really raised to watch all the old movies, and movies were a big part of our family life. So my mother was never an actress, but in this particular song, I imagine her to be one. That's for her and all the other women out there, I guess, who had dreams to, you know, be in the theater, etc., like that. So it was really just about that.
Was this a song that you deliberately wrote with a female singer in mind?
Yes, that's exactly right. And I'd only ever performed it myself. Rita McNeil, believe it or not, wrote me a letter about that song that she had heard before she passed away. And I was hopeful that she may have recorded it, but that didn't come to fruition. Yeah, it was very, I at one point, Jade is a very good friend of mine. She's sung a few of my duets with me over the years. She's in Nashville right now. She's doing very well. And she agreed to come and sing that live, so I was really touched. She's like an Irish dement to me. She has a beautiful voice, you know.
Let's play that just now. This is Jada Kelly with a J. Amar song, Always in Her Dreams, from the new J. Amar book and live CD, The Chicken Came First. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
Madeline was a cute girl. She liked center stage. When she was a younger girl, she acted older than her age. She was always filled with confidence, spinning from the seams. And Hepburn, always in her dreams. 19 is a young age for living on the road, missing the boys and the dances before her seeds were sown. In her mind, would happens in one's teens. Garbo and Hepburn, always in her dreams. Throw another broken heart to the pile of shattered dreams. Boulevard is fading fast, just like a bit room in a 2-bit uptown play. It dramatized the life and times of a girl who lost her way. In the girl was set adrift at sea, a place she'd never been. Garbo and Hepburn, always in her dreams. She played the wife and the mother in her finest role. Never won an Oscar, but she played with so much soul. She was filled with four-star memories of Crawford and Norma Jean. Garbo and Hepburn, always in her dreams.
Curtain will be falling soon, 'cause all the world's a stage. Then she prays that in another world she will play the queen, where Garbo and Hepburn are always in her dreams.
That's Jada Kelly with Always in Her Dreams from the new J.A. Maher book and CD. It's a live CD. It's entitled The Chicken Came First. And Jay is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. We're talking about his upcoming show at Hugh's Room. It takes place on Thursday, November the 26th. Why don't we talk about that show, Jay? Tell us a little bit about what people can expect when they come to Hugh's Room for the show.
This year we're gonna have a special guest opening the show. Her name is Jenny Tai, and Jenny is a blues inspired piano player and songstress, and I'm a huge fan of Jenny's. We actually toured together for a little while this summer, and I just think she's one part Aretha Franklin, one part Joni Mitchell, and all parts Jenny Tai. A great writer, and so she'll be opening the show for us. I have my violin player and harp player, Sarah Featherstone, and Sarah's agreed to bring her nice harp along and play some traditional songs that she's written as well. We have Justin Rappel, who's going to be playing drums, Joe Irnwine on guitar, Samantha McClellan on upright bass, and myself. And I think Richard Flohill is going to read a chapter from my book, and he's kind of one of my good pals. And you've been around the folk music world in Canada, I'm sure you've heard of Richard. So that should be hopefully you can make it out to that show.
I get the impression that Richard really likes the idea of being able to read as part of this show.
Yeah. He's always been really supportive supportive of this project as well, for sure. So that should be fun.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a fabulous night. Remember, that is Thursday, November the 26th. At Hugh's Room. If you check out our website, we have a link that takes you to Hugh's Room where you can buy tickets. Jay, it's been fabulous to talk to you today. We're going to finish with another song from the album. We've selected Walls Are Pages, which is interesting because it's a story that reflects on some of the work of people like Banksy, who get out there and create these wonderful graffiti murals. And Banksy is somebody who's been in the news a lot lately because of the wondrous nature of the art that's being produced that, you know, is really provocative. Tell us a little bit about this song.
Let me tell you, Jen, you're very insightful. You're good at what you do. That's amazing. Out of all the interviews I've done, people have not drawn these types of questions out. So I want to tell your listeners how great you are. It is exactly a Banksy-inspired thematically. It really was inspired by walking around a small, I don't want to mention the town, but somebody decided to paint interesting slogans and drawings all throughout this small town. I was on the East Coast, and as I took this morning walk, and I thought, well, I wonder who this could be, you know? And really, it was graffiti, but it was art, and they were making some amazing statements. Where they were putting the statements was, you know, maybe wrong, I guess, but it kind of felt right. So in that, I just decided to write this song about, I imagine this person to be like the country Swift, somebody who is operating at night and writing these lines down for the greater good of humankind. So that's really what the song's about, and there's the First Nations theme in the third verse as well, this one. So,
well, look, it's been great to talk to you today. If people want to learn more about your music, how can they do that?
I have a website. It's www.jayaymar.com, and that will lead you to everything I have going on.
That's great. Well, this is J.A. Maher with Walls Up Pages from the new book and CD entitled The Chicken Came First. And you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall. Thanks again, Jay.
Thank you.
An old wood church on the water down here where the headstone date to 100 years. A steeple tower with a broken bell where the country Swift wrote, "Go to hell." Every Sunday at high noon you could hear somebody laughing. A long black car out back by a pile of tires. It's a chicken coop now with the baling wires. Tagged in red upon that hearse, God is dead and the chicken came first. Ooh, the walls of pages. Ooh, 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 for the prophet of the ages. Ooh, ooh, the walls of pages. Ooh, 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 for the prophet of the ages. The master, he only works at night. You gotta do a little wrong to make things right. Yeah! Well, the red brick school was a Jesuit station where they took all the kids from the reservation. They broke their souls in the name of Christ. There's a picture on the wall of an eagle in flight. Sometimes a picture's worth a thousand souls, man. there's a cenotaph by the government dock with the names of the heroes carved in rock. A rusty tug stuck on the shore where the country swift wrote, "Kill the war." Whoa, whoa. A walls of pages. Whoa, whoa, whoa. For the prophet of the ages. Whoa, whoa. Walls of pages. Years, a steeple tower with a broken bell where the country swept wrote, "Go to hell." Well, we got a few more for you.